Thank you, Taylor. I am looking forward today to building on the excellent presentations by Taylor, by Mike, by Megan, but I do want to begin by emphasizing, I'm coming at what has happened in response to Winter Storm Uri by way of this regulatory and legislative update from the gas side of the equation. That's the bulk of my practice. And I would only take issue with one particular element that I've heard used this morning to describe this process, and that is referring to the gas system as a system. And I think as we kind of disaggregate this a little bit, you'll see that there is a clear distinction in the way in which ERCOT operates. As you look at the various protocol revisions, the way the PUC operates, you look at the rulemakings, extraordinarily comprehensive attention to the various elements of the market. I frequently say that the Railroad Commission uses a laissez-faire approach, or actually whatever the French word for less than laissez-faire is. I don't know what that word is. As you can imagine, the focus of the legislative and regulatory activity this year has been largely in response to Winter Storm Uri. And it is a unique challenge to the Railroad Commission in particular. You heard Mike comment earlier that in these instances of an emergency that the PUC and the Railroad Commission do in fact collaborate, and that's true. The problem is, what happens when they have to do the more banal? What happens when they have to do the nitty-gritty? What happens when they have to have a rulemaking that actually flanges up with what the PUC is doing? That's where things get more difficult, and the Railroad Commission has less experience and less of a track record in terms of consistently applying the political capital that it has to the bureaucratic and technocratic process of getting this done, making this work. So whereas on a day-to-day basis, they don't really have to collaborate, in many ways choose to not collaborate, they have no choice now for the reasons that you've heard this morning. So one of the things that I wanted to do by way of highlighting the new legislation, much of which has been covered with respect to, for example, SB3 and the critical facilities and customers designation, is to talk a little bit about this system. Because what I've come to understand is something that I work with routinely is not well understood in Austin. I was asked during the legislative session the Texas Oil and Gas Association asked me to appear before a committee and help them understand the way that gas works from the wellhead to the burner tip. And I think it is accurately described as a supply chain. It is not, however, an integrated system whereby you can see with transparency everything from pricing from the generator, so to speak, the producer of the oil and gas, to the ultimate sale and consumption by the end user. The thing that unifies this supply chain is a series of, in most cases, independent contracts between the various parts of the system, as opposed to working on any kind of integrated basis as a whole. So let's just break some of this down for those that are a little bit less familiar with the constituent pieces of this supply chain. Obviously, we begin with the well. And what comes out of the well relative to gas, and sometimes you have associated gas from the production of oil, and sometimes you're producing just gas. Along with that gas comes many different components. In addition, as you are probably familiar, much of the gas that we produce these days comes from a process called fracking, which involves the injection of enormous amounts of water down the wellbore. So this graphic comes from the Energy Information Administration, and one of the things that actually doesn't emphasize is that there's another piece that they would need to add here, which is that coming out of the wellbore, you need to have an additional arrow pointing to the water facilities. Now, the reason that I mention that is because we're trying to get to a point where the entire spectrum of entities in the oil and gas space understand how they may ultimately be affected by this critical customer and critical facility designation. Well, why would the water produced from the well be critical? Well, I'll cover that in just a minute, but that's one of the things is you have to understand there's a bunch of independent and yet integrated pieces in the supply chain that have to work in coordination, but they're not centrally coordinated. And that's part of the challenge in this industry. Moving on, skipping past the big tank where it says oil and water, vented and flared. We could probably spend a whole CLE presentation on venting and flaring, environmental impacts, and the Railroad Commission's response to the challenges posed by venting and flaring, but I'm not gonna focus on that now. What we wanna move to next is to gas processing. So in describing gas processing, the thing to understand here is going back to that wellhead. Remember I told you that it's not just gas that comes out of that well. It's gas and other liquids. And you cannot put those liquids into a pipeline system and make it safe for delivery to homes and businesses. You have to extract from it the liquid components that are part of that full well stream. And what that does is it actually produces, in effect, two pipelines at the back of a processing facility. You have one pipeline in which you have dry or residue gas. That's the gas that you expect to move in long-haul transportation pipelines and ultimately have delivered to homes and businesses. The other one is what we call natural gas liquids. It's got, Phil, I think it's probably got five different names in the business, but we'll just call it natural gas liquids for now. There's way too much jargon in the oil and gas business. From that stream, you actually move that to separate facilities, mostly along the Gulf Coast, that fractionate that those natural gas liquids into ethane, propane, pentane, and all of the anes, and have their own commodity values. Well, why is that relevant to delivering gas to homes and businesses? Again, we'll talk about that in just a second, but that's an essential piece of this supply chain.